stared at him. "You were the previous tribal chief of police?"
"I was, in the 60s and 70s. Then was appointed interim for a short period up until a few months ago."
I nodded. "You were pretty good buddies with my old boss, Lucian."
"I was. How is he doing?"
"Busy as a one-legged man at an ass-kicking convention." He extended his hand in a more formal manner this time, and I shook it. "I've known about you for years, Sheriff. You made a big impression on my people with your efforts in the Little Bird case."
"Thank you. I thought about it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Eddie Baylor the chief up here for the last 18 years?
"He was. And then I was the interim chief for a few months until they could find a suitable replacement."
He reached down and ruffled Dog's hair. "I guess the previous elder chief decided I was too old to have the job on a permanent basis again."
"That would be the elder chief who gave Lolo Long the job?"
"Yes."
"The one who was indicted along with Baylor?"
He nodded with a sad smile.
"Yes."
"How come you didn't stick on as a patrolman?"
"They had a full complement of officers, and there were no openings."
Lorraine brought us out a brace of iced teas. I thanked her and thumbed the straw into my mouth.
"Well, that's certainly not the case now."
He continued to smile, but this time it took on a mischievous, fox-like look.
"I heard she fired the entire department."
"She did."
He shrugged and smiled, shaking his head.
"Probably for the best. They were a bunch of lazy bastards."
"You should go back."
He sipped his own tea.
"To what?"
I pointed to my shirt, especially the name tag.
"The job."
He studied me.
"You'd join up?"
"Nope, I'm just on loan on a temporary basis."
I watched him and could see the thought traveling around there, bumping against the ceilings of his mind like a benevolent honeybee.
"No, I'm too old to be wrestling drunks and getting hit in the back of the head with wine bottles on domestic disturbances. Anyway, I got shot a while back. They patched me up, but I think I lost my enthusiasm."
"She needs help."
A stillness overtook him. The stillness that only natives can do, like a breeze of cedar smoke. It blows through their bodies and becomes a non-tangible thing, almost as if they become completely invisible.
"She's going to be a good cop. But after this week I'm going to be gone, and she could use a little guidance."
He broke the spell by speaking.
"I don't know if I would make a very good patrolman. I was chief for so long."
He glanced up at Lorraine and then to me.
"And I know it's wrong, but I've never worked for a woman."
Lorraine stifled a laugh. I squelched a little chuckle of my own.
"Are you married, Albert?"
32 years.
"Then don't worry about it."
He smiled some more.
"Nobody wants an old broken-down Indian cop."
"Well, I don't know if you've noticed, but people aren't exactly knocking down the doors over at the law enforcement center." I sipped my tea. "I'll give you a recommendation if you need it." He nodded some more.
"She has a reputation."
"Yes, she does. And I'm sure we do, too."
He changed the direction, if not the subject.
"How goes the investigation into the two deaths?"
I was reticent, but if he was willing to bring up the subject in front of Lorraine, it was fine by me.
"You already know about Clarence?"
"Moccasin Telegraph."
"The feds laid a trump card onto us with a recording of a conversation where Clarence Last Bull tries to hire Artie Smallsong to kill his wife and child. But there's been some doubt cast on its validity."
"By who?"
"Nate Smallsong and Herbert His Good Horse."
"They would know."
There was a cry from the kitchen, and Lorraine left for a moment and then re-entered, balancing three plates with rolls of silverware in her hands.
"Who gets the half-cooked mound of ground beef?"
I glanced down. "Oh, you lucky dog."
I took the plate and watched as the brute froze.
"You take off my hand, and I'm never bringing you gambling again." Sensing my tone of voice, he promptly sat. I lowered the plate as if I were submerging my hand into crocodile-infested waters. He waited and then dove in. Albert and I began eating as Lorraine disappeared into the kitchen, only to come back with a pitcher of iced tea. I would have just as soon had the old police chief to myself to discuss the recent happenings, but I wasn't going to send her away. I'd had my say in trying to enlist the man and changed the subject. "What did you do in the interim, Albert? Between service?" He chewed his salad. "Worked construction. Was a jackleg electrician, plumber, you name it. I built most of the offices over at the tribal headquarters."
"It's an impressive building.
State of the art, or was about 10 years ago." He sipped his tea. "Back in the economic heyday after 9/11, we got all this extra Patriot Act money and put in an entire audiovisual security system."
I thought about it.
"Is it still in operation?"
He shook his head at his plate.
"No. Most of the equipment wasn't kept up, and the added expense of having somebody in the security crow's nest just wasn't feasible. Now they just have a desk in the middle of the hallway."
"Barrett Long?"
Albert nodded. "He's a good kid, but boy, he gives that sister of his hell."
I smiled. "He's a pistol."
Lorraine's voice joined in with the hush of gossip. "He's also a rounder."
She looked embarrassed. "He's a very handsome young man." "Gets around, huh?"
She shrugged. "He was after my daughter for a while, but I put a stop to that."
I thought about Clarence, but figured the best thing to do was let dead men lie.
"He was even flirting with Audrey Plainfeather when she and Clarence were having their problems."
Albert glanced up at her, but remained silent. She noticed his look and was immediately apologetic.
"I don't mean anything. I mean, he's there in the building and flirts with everything in a skirt." She smiled in a nervous way. "He looks good in a black T-shirt."
She stood there for a moment more, then refilled our glasses.
"I'd better go check on the kitchen."
Albert watched her go, silently shook his head, and brought his eyes over to mine.
"And you want me to get involved with all that again?"
I thought about how much of my 6 hours to break this case were gone, and what I could do between now and dinner.
"Maybe sooner than you suspect."
I sipped my tea and rested the glass back in the perfect circle of condensation on the counter, and then picked up my burger.
"You wouldn't happen to have a set of old keys to tribal headquarters, would you, Albert?"
It wasn't easy to break into the Northern Cheyenne tribal headquarters, since the damn thing was completely surrounded by roads, parking lots, and dusk-to-dawn lights. We'd parked Res Dog at the rear of the building with an unhappy dog sitting on the bench seat. It was going to be difficult enough to go about breaking and entering without being accompanied by a prairie grizzly. Albert Blackhorse sorted through a ring of keys that looked like a holiday wreath.
"It's one of those square-head do-not-duplicate ones. I always keep one of them."
I stood with my back to him in order to provide a blind and keep a lookout. Wise decision. After a few moments, I asked, "Any luck?"
"I think Long might have changed the locks."
There was a jostling.
"Nope. Got it."
I listened as the heavy security door swung wide, just as an aged Plymouth rolled by with about 100 people in it. They stared at me and I waved, figuring a bold crook is a successful crook. After they'd chugged around the swerve in the road, I turned and followed Albert.
"Something?"
I shook my head and carefully closed the metal door. "A war party in a minivan, but I think we're safe." "What are they going to do, call the police?"
He nodded. "They could call the FBI.
They're busy having dinner in Billings."
"The BIA?
There's that. You have any friends over there?"
He smiled with the one corner of his mouth. "A few, but not many. They're all from other tribes."
It was true, the BIA was staffed mostly with members of other tribes. I followed him through a hallway I didn't know existed, and we approached a stairwell. "The crow's nest is in the basement?"
"Yeah, more like a crow hole,"
Albert called over his shoulder as we went down the steps to open a second door. We turned right into another hallway that ran lengthways underneath the building with storage spaces and adjacent utility rooms. Albert reached over and flipped on the lights, bare bulbs hanging from conduit holes along the metalwork in the ceiling.
I don't think we have to worry about being seen down here.
He walked along the hallway with his shoulders stooped, stopping in front of a nondescript door with a small wire mesh window. It looked like there had been an identifying plaque on it, but all that was left was the adhesive where the sign had been. Albert fumbled with more keys as I leaned against the concrete wall.
Sounds like Lorraine Tutu doesn't care for Barrett Long.
Lorraine Tutu doesn't care for anybody who shows an interest in Inez, and that would be about half the tribe.
The male half?
Pretty much, but that kid.
He shook his head as he turned a key in the lock.
She's a tough one.
He pushed the door open with a scraping sound from the hinges, noisy from lack of use.
Here we go.
He brushed a hand along the wall, and I heard a switch being flipped, but it was unaccompanied by illumination.
Damn it!
I heard him shuffle closer to me.
Hold the door open, and I'll steal a bowl from the hallway.
I watched as he went out, licked his fingers, and reached up to untwist one of the bulbs, only to let it escape from his grip and pop on the concrete floor with a surprisingly loud sound. I glanced at the army of retreating lights.
Looks like there are plenty more to choose from.
He nodded, advanced on the next one, and was more careful this time. Cradling the bulb in his hand as he entered the room, he undid the old bulb, handed it to me, and screwed in the borrowed one. The room flashed into view, and so did the dust and cobwebs of the abandoned security center. There was a single chair, a counter, and small monitors in a shelf system, along with a rack of recording decks that looked as if they might have never been used.
Looks like you were right. Nobody's been in this place in years.
Do you mind if I ask what it is you're looking for?
I took a few steps toward the rolling chair, placed the burnt-out bulb on the counter, and studied the monitors that studied me back like gigantic myopic eyes.
Nothing, really. I was just thinking.
There was a portion of one of the audio recording decks where some of the dust had been wiped away, as if by accident. I reached behind it and nudged it forward. Something brushed against the back of my hand. I caught a couple of cables.
Should these be unplugged?
He shrugged.
They're just the usual RCA cables, stereo, one red and one white, and this place hasn't been used in years.
He paused for a moment and then fingered the end where another Y-shaped cable joined the other two and combined them into one small thin junction plug. What is it? He ignored me and leaned around the side in order to study the back and then turned with a puzzled look on his face.
It's disconnected from the junction box. But that's not the only funny part. That splicer on there is to connect the cables into a modern computer.
I fingered the cable end. You didn't have anything like this back when you wired the place?
No. This is a USB connector.
He glanced up at me.
You don't know a lot about computers, do you?
Next to nothing.
I looked at the monitors. Albert, are the audio and visual surveillance systems connected or separate?
Separate. We had a lot of money back then, but not that much.
Is every office in the building wired for sound? He shook his head.
No, just the communal areas.
Like reception?
Yes.
I held up the cables. Are these the ones connected to human services?
I don't know.
Is there any way to find out?
He shrugged.
Sure, there should be a location code on the junction box, and then we just need the code off of the mic at the reception desk.
He leaned behind the rack and ran a hand up the wall to a large, open junction box in the ceiling. His eyes raced down the small black-and-white labels.
R7.
I was about to speak when it sounded like one of the heavy metal doors to the stairs opened and, after a few seconds, closed. Albert and I froze, looking at each other and then toward the audio room door which we'd lodged open. Albert looked more worried than me.
Should we close that door and turn off the light?
We're the good guys. I listened, but there weren't any more sounds. but maybe we can catch a bad guy." He nodded, went to the doorway, and peered around the corner, then turned back to me. "Should I go down the hall the other way and up those stairs, double back and come down behind them?" I pulled the .45 from the small on my back. "Do you have a weapon?" He reached under his black satin jacket and held out one of those antiquated garage door opener-style tasers. "I have this." I looked at the thing doubtfully. "Well, let's hope it's not a gunfight." He nodded solemnly, went down the hall the other way, quickly made a right, and disappeared. I could hear him climb the stairs. As he moved away, I flipped off the switch in the security room. Albert was gone for about a minute, when the rest of the lights also went out. I edged to the doorway and kneeled, placing my shoulder against the jamb. It sounded as if someone was moving to the left, the grit of the hard floor twisting underneath leather soles. My eyes closed because there wasn't anything to see there in the subterranean part of the rambling complex, and I wanted to give my ears all of my attention. Whoever was out there in the dark along with me. And it was also possible that he didn't care for the thought of bullets ricocheting in the confined concrete area any better than I did. I heard the sound of footfalls again, but this time it was farther away, and I got the feeling that whoever it was, he had gotten to a certain point and was now retreating. I edged farther into the hallway and listened. It wasn't as if he didn't know somebody was down here, and it wasn't as if he didn't know that I knew he was there. The big question was whether he was armed. I clicked off the safety on the big Colt, the noise echoing through the darkness. There was no metallic mating call, so either they were unarmed or already in a position to fire. I leaned out a little farther and could hear someone carefully retreat. I was momentarily distracted by an unpleasant smell, but then slowly raised myself from the crouching position, stood, and listened to make sure I was hearing what I thought I was. Satisfied, I took a step and softly moved forward in the darkness on the balls of my cowboy boots. I got halfway down the hall and crunched the broken glass of the forgotten light bulb. Every muscle in my body seized as I waited for the incoming bullet. After about 40 seconds, I heard a slight sound and raised the Colt in my hand, aiming it toward the faint glow coming through the tiny window in the door leading to the stairwell where we'd descended. In one flash of movement, the door was yanked open, and somebody threw himself through the opening and let the door slam behind him. I launched myself and ran down the hall as fast as my limited visibility would allow. I glanced off the wall, caught my balance, and turned right to claw at the handle with my free hand, finally getting some fingers wrapped around it and throwing it open. Someone's boots pounded up the concrete steps, and I followed at full speed, making the landing in two strides. I raised the Colt and took aim at the individual who had his back to the door, his empty hands outstretched toward me. "Don't shoot!" I looked at Barrett Long. "What the hell are you doing?" He looked as if his heart might explode from his chest as one hand was placed over it, the other coming up to clutch his forehead. "What the hell are you doing?" I lowered the .45 and held out an open hand in supplication. "Investigating." His voice was hoarse and whistled in his throat in exasperation as he tried to catch his breath. "In the dark?" "Sorry." He looked around, possibly for his breath.
"Jesus!"
I holstered the Colt, more than a little relieved that most likely the possible shooting part of the evening was over. "I'm here with Albert Blackhorse. I had an idea and wanted him to show me the old security room." He breathed for a moment. "Why didn't you just ask me?"
"I didn't figure you were around."
"I wasn't actually, but I got a call from Carl Red Fox and some friends of mine who said they thought they might have seen somebody breaking into the building."
"That'd be us."
"Jesus!" He took a few more deep breaths. "Is my sister with you?"
"No, she had to make a run to Hardin."
"So who's with you again?"
"Albert Blackhorse."
"The casino guy?"
"And retired police chief."
"Jesus!"
"Let's go find him before he tasers somebody."
The young man turned and pushed the bar on the heavy door, but it didn't budge. He paused for a second and then pushed on it again, this time with a great deal of force, but the thing didn't move.
"Shit!"
"What?"
He slammed an open palm against it, the echo filling the stairwell.
The damn thing must have locked when I come through.
I stepped next to him and tried pushing on the lever, but it still didn't move. That's strange. This is a fire door, and they're supposed to always stay open out.
The building's closed.
I shook my head. Doesn't matter.
It's no big deal. There are three more exits in the basement. We just have to go down and come up another stairwell.
I pushed off and started down the steps. All right, but let's hurry. I don't want Albert to think that something's happened. I don't think his heart can take it. Barrett clumped down the steps behind me as I opened the basement door and walked through, my hand still clutching it when I stopped and jammed the doorway with my bulk. The young man ran into the back of me as I stood there.
Jesus!
He stood still for a moment and then coughed.
Why'd you stop?
I didn't move.
Do you smell that?
Yeah. Smells like fart.
I ignored him, and he coughed again before leaning forward into the hallway.
What is that?
I bent down, sniffing the air at a lower level.
Propane. A lot of it.
Chapter 16. If the overwhelming smell of a compressed 3-carbon alkane 1.5 times heavier than air compound was now at waist height, there was enough propane in the substantial basement to choke us to death, if not blow us to the moon, if ignited. Barrett made a face.
Gas leak?
Either that or somebody drove a propane delivery truck into the basement and opened the hatch. I looked around. Where are the other exits? He pressed himself against the door.
4 corner stairwells and 2 central on either side, but we should go back up and force this door open.
It's a 3-inch metal security door. If it's been locked on the outside, then there's no way we're getting out.
You think somebody locked it?
I don't know, but Albert Blackhorse was down here with me and went upstairs to check the mic designation in the human services office, and he didn't come back. Barrett stayed planted.
You've got your gun. You could shoot the lock.
I holstered my .45 and explained, with the amount of propane flooding into this basement, discharging a weapon would most assuredly blow us to hell and not necessarily back. I did a few calculations. Barrett, this basement is filling with propane, a highly flammable gas that sinks. Pretty soon we're not going to be able to breathe because the oxygen it replaces will be gone. Now that's the least of our problems because if this gas reaches an ignition point, like a pilot light or any kind of open flame, this entire basement is going to be like the ass end of a Saturn V rocket. I started off again, but then turned and looked at him and then down the hallway at the light bulb filaments. Whatever you do, don't turn on any light switches or anything else for that matter.
You think Albert did this to us?
I sighed, coughed, and breathed in even more of the gas as we made our way down the hallway where the smell was even greater. I don't know, but somebody's killing people around here, and one of the key elements for pinning it on Artie's small song is that doctored recording. I've got a suspicion that Artie's side of that recording was made with the security mics in human services.
The old security recording system?
You got it. He'd caught up.
When he had that blow-up with Audrey?
I'd avoid using the term blow-up, considering our current situation. He shook his head.
There aren't any fire sources down here. They're all up in the utility areas.
That's not what concerns me.
What then?
We arrived at the central stairwell. I'll tell you if the doors at the top of these stairs are locked, too. We hustled up the steps, and it was with a great deal of resignation that I pushed down on the latch. I pushed again, just to make sure, but there was only a little movement, and the doors wouldn't open.
Damn.
Barrett stepped in as I peered through the small rectangular windows and down at the bars on the other side, securely chained together with a heavy padlock. He shoved as hard as he could, but the two doors only budged open about an inch.
Barrett, do they normally chain the security doors together when the building is closed?
His eyes were widening a little as the realization of our predicament started settling in.
No, never. It's against the law.
He went up on tiptoe again to look down at the heavy chains wrapped around the bars on the other side.
Jesus!
I nodded. Like rats.
We gotta get to another door.
They're all going to be locked. His hand slammed against the solid surface.
Then we gotta get this one open.
I looked up and could see that the doors were hinged from the other side. Is there any way out of the basement other than the doors? Utility hatches? Air ducts? Dumbwaiters?
I don't know. He took a deep, polluted breath. We're safe, right? I mean, if all the doors are locked, then there's no way that anybody could light the gas.
Sure they could. All you'd have to do is drill a hole in the floor and drop a match into the basement.
Of course, they have to figure out how to get away before the explosion. Then why don't we just stay up here, above the propane?
Because if that gas ignites, it's going to expand and take out every door in the place, probably with parts of us, and I don't mean gently.
Then what are we going to do?
I chewed on the inside of my cheek. I'm trying to figure that out, if you'd stop asking questions.
I thought back to the conversation I'd had with Albert about the sordid history of the structure.
Is this building sitting on top of the original tribal headquarters that burnt down twice?
Yeah, part of it. Do you have any idea how they used to heat that building back in the 60s and before? He shook his head, but then pointed at it.
Duh! The one thing we have plenty of on the res, coal. I nodded. That means there's a coal chute back there somewhere if it hasn't been filled in and sealed off.
I watched as he thought about it.
Like a cellar?
Yep.
It's there. I mean, the doors are.
As we gingerly made our way down the steps and opened the door at the bottom, we could tell the limited airspace in the basement was filling with even more of the gas.
Same rules. Don't flip any switches and stay clear of those light bulbs. You break one and we're dead.
We ignored the stairwell doors at the southeastern corner of the building, and we could see where the poured concrete walls changed to block. By the time we got to the rear of the building, it had changed once again to a slip-form foundation with large rocks embedded in the concrete. There was a section of the wall with T-111 siding sealing off the opening.
Is this it?
Barrett nodded his head.
Yeah, but don't you think it's sealed?
One way to find out. I pulled my case double X from my pocket, slipped it between the thin sheath of wood, and pried loose a corner, revealing the stud wall underneath. I placed a hand up to the opening. I feel warm air. I wrapped my fingers around the paneling and pulled it loose, yanking it with a little more urgency.
Come on, help me.
What if a nail scratches the concrete?
Let's try to make sure that that doesn't happen, shall we?
Once we'd worked the plywood loose, we could see the facing on the other side, along with the cobwebs where the wall had been undisturbed for decades. I pushed at the top and was able to smell the freshness of clean air, spread my fingers across the splintering wood, and forced it on top of the poured concrete they had used to fill the open space behind the wall. I braced a boot against one of the 2x4s and lodged a shoulder in the opening just enough to give me the leverage I needed to pull the stud loose from the header.
It's been filled in, but there's room at the top where you might be able to squeeze through.
What about you?
I shook my head. I'm too big. I'll never fit.
What are you going to do?
Wait for you to come back and get me out of here.
I laced my hands in a stirrup to give him a boost up.
Come on, we're wasting time.
What if I don't find a way?
I smiled. You will.
He placed his hiking boot into my hands, and I lifted him up to where he could flatten out and climb onto the surface of the concrete, where there was about 18 inches of space.
What if I can't get the cellar doors open? What if they're chained too? Are the doors old or new?
Old.
And break the wood. I listened as he crawled through, carefully avoiding the nails, and slithered into the darkness.
I can see the light where the doors come together.
I waited and listened as he grunted with the strain of attempting to push them open.
They're locked or something, but it gives, so let me give it a try with my legs.
The sound of his exertions was accompanied by the noise of splintering wood as a little more air broke through.
I got it. It broke the clasp, and I think I can make it. Where should I meet you?
The nearest stairwell to the left, the southeast corner. Find something to cut the chain or break the padlock.
I thought about it.
And call your sister. Hell, call everybody.
I thought this was a covert operation.
Not anymore.
He laughed, and I listened as he kicked more of the wood away.
Anything else? Find the propane tank and turn it off.
Okay.
And Barrett, be careful.
I will.
He didn't say anything else, and I could hear the pounding of his feet as he ran away.
I slumped against the wall.
And hurry.
The stairwell was now to my right at the corner of the building. I was looking forward to more oxygen than the hallway was providing and coughed. When I got to the corner, I thought for just a split second that I might have heard something.
Albert?
A cough, and I adjusted my eyes to the partial darkness.
Albert?
There was a faint response,
whispered and hoarse, from far down the hall. "Here!" The temptation to pull my sidearm was great, but knowing that if I fired it, the place would go off like a Roman candle in a fireworks trailer was enough to give me pause. I hustled down the hall. Albert lay in the doorway of the far stairwell and was trying to prop himself up. He was bleeding from a wound at the back of his head, but not too badly. I grabbed him and lifted him above the gas. It was something of a miracle that he hadn't choked to death already. "Albert, what happened?"
His head lolled a bit. "Stupid. Got hit from behind."
I got him up on his feet when I noticed that he was missing one of his shoes.
"They knocked your shoe off?"
He shook his head to clear it.
"Lodged it in the doorway above so that we could get out."
I smiled.
"Good man. Come on, here we go."
Hoisting him up onto my hip, where I could grip under his arm and support most of his weight, I started us up the stairs. I looked at the exterior door and figured the first thing to do would be to get him to some fresh air. Then I could decide if I was stupid enough to come back into the building. I stumbled toward it. Albert coughed.
"All the exterior doors are locked. There's a double lock mechanism."
He gestured toward his side.
"They took my keys."
I turned and looked toward the interior of the building, where Albert's